Okay, so good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Today I'd like to talk on symmetry breaking and the Roton-like structure about the new one-half Laplace states overloaded in BC. I'll first talk about motivation and background and also briefly review related other people's work. The main body of my talk consists of two parts. First is slowly rotating BC, where I'd like to address how symmetry breaking due to vortex nucleation can be probed by looking at many body spectra. Of course, in the many body theory, no symmetry breaking occurs, at least for finite systems. But there is a way to look at the symmetry breaking by looking at the many body spectra. And the second part, focuses on fast rotating BC, where I would like to point out that a Roton-like structure, like the magnet Roton structure in quantum fraction quantum Hall system, also appears above the numerical one-half Laplace state. And this single particle-like structure also has no phonon branch, despite the fact that this is a short-range interactions. So I think there is some link to low condensed matter people. And finally, if I have time, I'd also like to address some issues about a rich variety of vortex phases of binary BC systems, such as stripes, double cores, and serpentine vortex sheets.
Well, what do you mean by the last thing?
Pardon?
You explain?
Laughlin?
A serpentine
vortex. A serpentine is.
Yes,
like serpentine. So I'll show you later. Let me spend a few words about why I think the subject of atomic gas BC is interesting, because they also relate to the general interest aspects of this talk. First, as Chris said yesterday, this is a highly interdisciplinary field of research. New ideas are created when different thinkings and cultures meet. What's perhaps more interesting to me is the following. The theoretical predictions are falsifiable in this field. this is very important to me.
Don't say that too much.
Because, well...
You have some examples of that?
Well, yeah, example. So this is a field where atomic physics precisions are available. For example, the frequency standard has already achieved 15 digits of accuracy, and they are now aiming at 18 digits. This is a region where just a 1 centimeter fold of an atom leads to a gravitational redshift of the comparable size. So there is virtually no experimental excuse for theories. So I cannot say that my theory is correct because my theory agrees with the experiments. The agreement with the experiments is obtained only if the theory is correct.
Well, also the experiment is correct.
Yes. That's also important. Yeah, yeah. Well, we may exploit this unprecedented degree of, for example, another example is that an electron is orbiting around the cesium atom, which sometimes exchanges double bosons with a core nucleus. And this gives rise to a partly non-conserving atomic transition, which was also observed by Carl Wieman groups. So we may exploit this unprecedented degree of controllability to explore the many-body effects of rotating BC. Today, by making the strength of interaction close to, but of course not equal to zero. A rotating BC in this regime has direct relevance to atomic and low-temperature physics, as well as strongly correlated systems such as fraction quantum Hall effects and nuclear physics. The first part focuses on this experiment. When the rotation frequency of the container is smaller than some critical frequency, there is no vortex. So this corresponds to the Meissner effect in superconductivity. However, when it exceeds the critical value, then a vortex enters the system. Between these two regimes has also exact axis symmetry. However, between these two regimes, there is a nucleation process in which a vortex should enter somewhere from into the center, in which the axis symmetry of the system should be spontaneously broken. So the question I would like to address is, how can we understand such symmetry breaking in terms of many-body system, many-body spectrum? Of course, on the mean field level, we can play with the Gross-Pitaisky equation, and then the vortex can explicitly enter the systems. But I would like to see this on a many-body spectrum and seek for something new beyond Bogoliubov. The second part focuses on a fast rotating BC. As the rotation frequency increases, more and more vortices enter the systems. So what happens to BC in the limit of fast rotation? I mean, even faster than this one. Nigel, Nicola, and Mike gave a related talk, and there are many other related important works. Among them, our interest here is the many-body excitation spectrum above the nu equal 1/2 Laughlin state. My claim is that there is a very well-defined single particle-like spectrum. Okay.
Could I ask you a question?
Yes,
when
please.
You use the word symmetry breaking, I mean, are you using it in a technical sense or are you just visual? I mean, is there an order parameter that is disappearing above or below some point, or is just visual things changing so symmetry is breaking?
Visual. Yeah. No long range order because this is a finite size system.
No, I was asking even, is there an order parameter? I mean, that you can define some parameter of the system. That zero are finite, or small and large.
Oh, that's very finite. Interesting. There might be a hidden dynamical order parameter, but I have been unable to find it out.
So it's a visual fact that there was no vortex.
Maybe not just, but perhaps at the end of the talk, I will comment on this. There may be some hidden dynamical symmetry.
No, you have those informations, and in fact, I think it's not published, but has been done. But you can certainly get it easily from your calculation in the sense that you can calculate a single particle density matrix and then see how many eigenvalue there is. Now, I understand you may have a finite number of particle system, so you would not have. So the contrast of different eigenvalue may not be high. However, in the state where you have a good order parameter, then you would have some large peak somewhere.
Yes.
You can actually track that exactly.
Right. We can trace
right,
exactly
so
that.
I would claim that is a good answer to Shankar's question.
Yeah, we can always define the single part order parameter in terms of single part density matrix. Yeah, that's true. Yes. Thank you.
But at the mean field level, it's the rotational invariance that's been broken, so it's like about a non-conservation in some sense.
Well,
but whereas the one body with density matrix stuff, you're doing it exactly, and there's no actual. It's just the rate, the magnitude of difference, and eigenvalue density matrix change. Not unfortunate, so. Anyway.
Yeah. So I guess Gaseous. Oh, please. A gaseous BC system is isolated from the surrounding environment because it is suspended in a vacuum chamber by a magnetic or optical trapping potential. When the potential is axis symmetric, then the angular momentum on the symmetry axis is conserved. This means that the angular momentum of the system can take any integer multiple of h bar. This presents a sharp contrast to the bulk superfluid systems, because in the bulk superfluid systems, the container actually has a microscopic rugosities on the surface. Therefore, there is no exact conservation of angular momentum on the level of H bar. So therefore, the container plays a role of a highly dissipative environment. The system can sustain angular momentum only at thermodynamically stable values. This means that the angular momentum conserved here is not integer times h bar, but we have to also multiply n, the number of atoms.
I'm not sure that's really true. If you have, say, more than one vortex, if you have two vortices symmetrically placed relative to the center, the angular momentum isn't an integer times n, because the angular momentum of a vortex off-center doesn't contribute. The interior region doesn't contribute because of a screening effect. So it's really not an integer. It's some number, but it depends on the configuration of the vortices.
That is true. That is true. Yeah.
There shouldn't be an integer there.
But, well,
unless you want to put a multiple quantized vortex on the axis, but that's not going to be the lowest state. Typically.
Yeah, the screening effect as some are multiplicative factors. Yes. The point I'd like to make here is that there is a microscopic Lugosz.
I mean, in general, it's not even if you said quantity, right?
To do thermodynamics, you have to be in a frame in which the walls are at rest, because then otherwise you have time-dependent potentials that do work on the system.
We can discuss thermodynamics with respect to the wall, yeah. So even if the wall itself is rotating. Yeah. So, but the message is this. So there is no exact axis symmetry in bulk superfluid systems. On the other hand, in a BEC system, there is actually no microscopic Lugosz. Therefore, in this respect, the gaseous BEC systems are more like nuclear systems than bulk, like bulk superfluid systems. So the interesting question to ask is, what is the energy spectrum of BC as a function of angular momentum? Yes?
But in the end, you are saying that also, you are putting also integer multiples in the lower equation. So what's the difference in the end?
This one? Yeah. Integer h bar times the number of atoms.
I guess Masahito is just trying to point out that for helium, the container is always atomically rough. Ultimately, there are atoms made up of the container, so there's no axis symmetry. But then in gases, there is axis symmetry. I think the discussion of whether the integer is not integer may be slightly...
Yeah.
It's definitely not the axis.
Yeah, there might be some factor there, but...
Exactly, when there is no axial symmetry, then...
Well, let me show. So this is the one I'd like to make. I mean, convey to you. So this field shows the circulation versus the rotation frequency. Then in a bulk superfluid helium, the circulation is quantized in this way. And those quantized values are what I called thermodynamically stable values. But And usually we cannot. It is not meaningful to discuss this region, where the angular momentum changes, by an integer multiple of h bar. This difference is an integer multiple of h bar times the number of atoms. Okay. So there can be an interesting field where we can investigate this region. And this is what in nuclear physics people call an electron problem.
What is gamma?
Gamma is a strength of interaction. So the gamma positive is a repulsive region, and the gamma negative is an attractive region. Well, by the way, it's interesting. In the attractive regions, the circulation is quantized only partially. There is some crossover region where BC is fragmented. So maybe this is also might be an interesting new field subject.
I don't understand the last sentence, last point.
It's
quantized only in the uniform density regime.
Okay. So since this is not the subject of this talk, I didn't explain very well. This figure I obtained for 1D torus. And this region, BEC, is uniform. However, when we switch to the attractive interaction for some particular value of angular frequency, there is a bright soliton which is formed. Yeah, and it is those bright soliton regions where circulation is not quantized. Okay, so what is an elastic state? The elastic state describes the lowest energy state of an isolated system subject to a given angular momentum. Subject to a given angular momentum, I mean as a function of the angular momentum. So this region. And it's a fundamental concept in nuclear physics. Elastic is a superlative of Swedish R, meaning dizzy. So elastic is a digest. And this is a excitation spectrum of a heavy nuclei as a function of angular momentum. So for a given angular momentum, okay, so and this shows a region of stable, available excited state. So for a given angular momentum, the elastic state is the lowest energy state. Or for a given excitation energy, elastic state is the state of highest angular momentum. Therefore, the system in the elastic state is rapidly rotating, hence comes the name elastic, meaning digest. So when the system is in the elastic state, all the kinetic energy is used up for rotation, rigid body rotation. So the system is close to zero temperature. So this might allow one to measure fine energy levels. It has a spectrum close to the ground state. So there are, as we will see, there are quasi-degenerate spectrum, which are energetically very small. However, close to the elastic state, there may be some spectroscopic route to probe those fine spectrum. Okay, it is well known that the system of neutral particles in a rotating frame of reference is equivalent to that of charged particle in a magnetic field through this correspondence, where B is a magnetic field and omega is a rotation frequency. So therefore, many phenomena that have been observed in superconductors or in 2D semiconductors in magnetic field may also be observed in a rotating BCs. This schematic diagram shows the correspondence as a function of the rotation frequency versus the radial confinement frequency. Below some lower critical frequency, no vortex enters the system. So this corresponds to the Meissner state in superconductors. And above it, vortices enter the system, forming oblique sublattice. And these regions can be described, the ground state of these regions can be described by the Gross-Pitaisky mean field equation. However, what is less known is the many body aspects of the transition from the Meissner state to the vortex state. Okay, to answer this question, I use the familiar Hamiltonian in which the single particle part includes the kinetic energy and harmonic potential energy. And I assume a contact interaction of delta function type, where G denotes the strength of interaction. I will focus on the region where the strength of interaction is very much smaller than the single particle energy level spacing. H bar omega is the energy spacing of harmonic oscillator. Then it is advantageous to take a non-interacting wave function as a single particle basis. And moreover, when the strength of interaction is much smaller than H bar omega, it is energetically advantageous to restrict the angular momentum to non-negative. So this corresponds to the lowest Landau level approximation in fraction quantum Hall systems. Then this Hamiltonian reduces to this form, where the single particle part reduces to a term which is proportional to the angular momentum. And then the contact interaction term reduces to these two body interactions. So the point is this. So when, as a function of angular momentum, for a given angular momentum, this single particle part has no role because it is a constant. So we shall concentrate on only on interaction term.
Masahita.
Yes.
I just have a question.
Yes.
You know, I would believe that this is the Hamiltonian in the three-dimensional case.
Two.
But in the two-dimensional case, there is a problem that if you reduce the interaction to the contact interaction between particles,
yes,
then the interaction constant, the coupling constant, which is denoted here G, it actually depends on the characteristic momenta of particles. And eventually we know that for the Bose-Einstein condensate in 2D, zero temperature depends on the density or the chemical potential. So do you consider here that G is constant, just forgetting about that, or what? Because in fact, in the two-dimensional case, not in 3D, G is not a constant. People very often forget about that, and that's what many people do. I also read it sometimes. But well, in fact, this is wrong.
Well, in this talk, I will simply assume that G is constant. Uh-huh. Yeah, so this is should be considered to be a renormalized value.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that question is in fact a very interesting question. And in fact, I think it would be useful to have even just some very simple but systematic study of just one or two or few particles with a real potential to see how one achieve a post-quantum Hall regime even for a few particle system with realistic potentials. Especially they are tricky, as you say, they are tricky energy dependent. Low energy behavior.
What saves people here is that this dependence is logarithmic. Therefore, maybe there is no problem. I don't know, but that one has to have a look.
But this just could be a model. I mean, he doesn't have to use the word contact interaction. That's all he has to say. He has to say this is a model. Right?
No, this is a very interesting model, but George is raising
no, I understand the point.
The issue was a real system that could be actually.
No, I understand the point, but if you have a contact interaction, then this should not be the model, is what you're saying.
It's only a valid interaction when you project it to the lowest level. Yeah. After that, you don't have to worry about it. But you definitely otherwise do have to worry about
it. No, in 2D, there is a momentum dependent.
Not in the lowest, object to lowest lambda level. There's no problem with the lowest lambda level contact interaction. There are definitely problems with specifying the level of contact interactions.
Okay, we can discuss later.
Okay, what's interesting here is when the angular momentum is much larger than 1, in units of h bar, and g is zero, no interactions, then there will be a huge degeneracy in the ground state because the number of partitions of a given angular momentum over particles will increase exponentially. So there will be a huge degeneracy in the absence of interaction. Therefore, even the problem just reduced to finding how a very weak interaction lifts the degeneracy, selects one correct ELAS state, ground state, and determines the excitation spectrum thereof. So this is essentially the highly degenerate perturbation theory, and quite similar to the problem of fractional quantum Hall effect. Okay, so this shows the interaction energy as a function of the angular momentum. So I will ignore the single particle part henceforth because it is a constant. So I shall concentrate only on how the interaction, repulsive interaction energy, changes as a function of angular momentum. So as angular momentum increases, the interaction energy has a tendency to decrease because BC expands, therefore reduce the repulsive interaction. What's interesting is that this lowest line traces what is called the ELAS state. So what is interesting is that it's almost completely linear in angular momentum, like this. And this fact was first discovered numerically by Birch and Papenbrock, and then analytically proved by Nicola. Yes. So I'm interested in how about the excitation spectrum of this illustrated line. So I would like to look at those excitation spectrum a little bit detail, because this is a BC address, so no vortex state. And this is a point where a single vortex has entered the system to the center. So in between, there is some axis symmetry breaking. Pardon?
That's angular momentum per particle, your abscissa, right?
Yes. Angular momentum per particle. Yes, yes. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, so this is the many body excitation spectrum for a little bit larger number of particles, because I would like to see a more detailed structure as a function of angular momentum, again, per particle. So this is a one vortex state, this is zero vortex state. And this line corresponds to the elastic state, I mean, this line. So I will measure everything from this ground state, elastic state. And this picture shows a mean field shape of the condensate. Okay. So at this point, not one point, but at this point, a vortex is at the center. At this point, there is no vortex. And one thing is there is a quasi-degenerate spectrum near this point where a vortex is just entering the system. So there is ground state degeneracy, which I will show next. But the message is this quasi-degeneracy is the precursor for spontaneous symmetry breaking over the axis symmetry associated with the entrance of the vortex. And as the vortex enters the systems, we have a large energy gap. So those quasi-degeneracies are lifted. And emergence of the energy gap implies that many-body wave function responds to external rotation in such a way that the vortex state becomes stabilized. Okay, let me show you this part a little bit.
How do you get, is the illustration of the mean field wave function, is that the single particle density matrix?
This is just Gross-Peterski.
Okay, you don't actually calculate it for each one of those states or anything?
No. No, this is exact numerical calculation. So each point preserves exact axis symmetry.
Mm-hmm. If you actually look at the single particle density matrix, you see the sort of the row zero corresponding to the n equals one smoothly going down to zero for the n equals one, and the at the same time the n equals one state smoothly growing.
Did a two-body density matrix, would you see things with holes?
Yes, 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 I will show this. Yeah, I will show this later. So actually, yeah, there is a way to extract this information from this. Yes, that's two-body. Okay. So this picture shows the quasi-degenerate regions for our much larger number of particles, 10,000, in order to see a fine level. And this is again the ELASTO spectrum. So this is the total but not per particle. So once 10,000 versus just 30, so very close to the non-vortex state. So and also note that energy scale, it's G. Not this is G times N. So we are looking at the very close states, very close to the ELASTO state. And but nevertheless, not just this ELASTO line, which is strictly linear, but also those quasi-degenerate spectrum is also look very regular and parallel to the ELASTO line. And we can fit all those points by this simple formula. So 27 divided by 34, and n3 times n3 minus 1. And n sub 3 is the number of excited octupole mode. Octupole mode is a mode in which the angular momentum is 3. So those spectrum is that is a fact, it arises from there are many octupole mode excitations and they interact with each other, and which gives rise to those fine energy spectrum. So our claim is this. So these quasi-degenerate octupole modes accounts for the spontaneous symmetry breaking upon the vortex nucleation. Why octupole mode? It's, I think, in Hindu side is simple.
I'm trying to understand. So as I go up in energy, so N3 equals to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 as I go up, but there's still a degeneracy, which is not the still degenerate. These modes are still highly degenerate. It's optimal.
Well, highly degenerate in the sense that the energy scale is just G.
So if I go up on the ERAS line, then the first set of zeros at bottom is N3 equals to 1, is that right?
0 and 1. Yeah, and then two.
Two.
And this is three. N3 is 3.
I see. Okay.
So this is a disk calculation, right?
This is not disk, but our spherical calculation.
Yeah. Wait. You put everything on a sphere?
I don't know.
Disk calculations.
Okay. I'm sorry. Later I will show spherical calculation, but this is disk. This disk. Yes, I'm sorry.
The straight lines are one of the quantum numbers. Quantum. So the only meaningful data on that thing is the one to the leftmost one. The others have symmetry functions.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. And actually, this parabolic behavior turn out to be play a very important role.
So this ERAS line is actually just a well-known thing, which has been discussed, put in a different context.
Right? Yes. Oh, the octopolar excitation is the origin is simple. So originally, there is axis symmetry. And a vortex want to enter the system in such a way that, like this. Then how BC should be deformed? I think it's like this. So octopole. But okay. And this shows the way, in order to show this, I show in this view graph the correlation function of density-density two-body correlation function. I put one particle here, and then look at how the joint property distribution of other particles. So here the angular momentum is zero, but then as angular momentum slightly increases, we clearly see an octupole excitation. And then as angular momentum further increases, then the vortex will come in to the center.
So you fix one of the positions to be R to zero, the other one is
Here, around here.
Position, okay.
Yes.
How do you break the symmetry with the computer?
Pardon?
How do you decide the point?
He has chosen one special point.
Which
One point is chosen relatively arbitrarily in the region where there is actually no appreciable density. Yeah.
Should really be putting the quantum Hall viewpoint, when there's you should really be putting the two-body correlation function, and the straight lines are just the center of mass of the thing being pushed out.
Yes, through trend, yes.
So, but in a real experiment, quadrupole
mode is actually carried by the ERAS line. Thank you for this very important point. Actually, there is, in addition, I'm looking at the excitation spectrum, but in addition to that, there is a main contribution, ERAS line. And this ERAS part is actually carried by quadrupole mode. Yes.
So you say that if they look hard in experiments on top of the quadrupolar mode, and there should be a
octupole mode. Because only introduction of the octupole mode, we should break I mean, in a sense, mirror symmetry. If there is only octopole mode, then the vortex should enter both ways. Only in the presence of octopole mode, we allow one vortex.
This is the consequence of non-linearity.
Non-linear, yeah. Yeah, because it's an octopole-octopole mode excitation. So this is a consequence of non-linear interaction.
I know that this scenario of this vortex creation is that you start to excite the quadrupole mode, and then the condensate becomes elliptical.
Yes.
And then does like waves, like swell, does something like this. So you say that this is the octopole mode.
Octopole mode. At least initially.
But in this weak interaction case.
Yes, in this weak interaction case. Yes.
This is a calculation of the stationary state, right? The stationary state.
For a given angular momentum.
Then those calculations that Lima is referring to, these are dynamical calculations.
I'm referring to the experiment.
Yeah.
you mean Shinha and the custom?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, as a function.
Take a time dependent. If you're looking, for example, to minimize energy as a function not of angular momentum, fixed angular momentum, but rotation frequency, then you get a different frequency of vortex information. Not the one that Sina Pascal has got.
Not the one which.
Sinha and the custom.
Okay. Because there are several critical things.
Exactly.
Also, due to the instability of the surface mode.
But this is what I'm saying. Then the difference is because depending on how you, what's your criteria for going through the, if you're talking about the energy calculation, but talking about real time, and also the symmetry of the stirrer, the way you stir the concept.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, that's maybe more important. They calculate as a function of the angular frequency, rotation frequency. But this is as a function of angular momentum. So there is a Grigiando transformation.
Right, but the fact that you select quadrupole modes, for example, wouldn't this be really a function of the symmetry of the potential that you're applying to stir the concept?
Oh,
another?
That I think if you introduce the explicitly the axis symmetry breaking perturbation, then I think the situation would also become different. I mean, in real experiment, there is a stellar which explicitly breaks the axis symmetry. Then there is a recombination of all those quasi-degenerate states, and the mean field theory is recovered.
Right.
Yeah.
This one, was that one, is that one a disk or a sphere calculation?
Is what?
Is that one a disk or a sphere calculation?
Yeah. Well, later in a very high angular momentum state, I will switch to the spherical one.
Okay.
Yeah, but.
But let's see, just to answer some of the questions that raised me, I think it is true that I think one of the questions may be that, how does this compare with the current experiments which have large number of particles? I think that may not be a fair comparison at the moment. However, one can imagine in the future that we can have optical lattices at many sites, each site have a 100,000 particles also, and then I can really isolate them and then rotate them, then maybe these spectrums would be very relevant for the understanding how vortices enter into those small systems.
Yes, yes, yeah, precisely, yeah.
This one takes out the center mass angular momentum, but did the previous one or not?
Yes, you're right. I have taken
out the multiplets, and the other one you showed does have the multiplets.
Yeah, I have taken out those CPS, center of mass motion.
Okay, but the other graph you showed had the center of
this parallel one. Yeah, thank you.
Didn't Ketterly actually do some experiments on the L equals 3 and L equals 4 perturbations?
Who?
Ketterly. The octopole and the hexadecapole.
It wasn't Lewis Landau level, though.
It was like the study of surface perturbations with L equals 3 and 4, as I remember.
Well, that's Bogoliubov level.
Right.
Yeah, we've also done the similar calculation on the Bogoliubov level.
But this was the experiment.
Yeah, okay. It turns out that in order to fit, experiment is a G is much, much larger. Then there are more I mean, surface modes have become extremely complicated. Actually, I mean, much higher mode becomes also relevant, and I can't identify which one corresponds to real experiments. Yeah, so that's another motivation why I restrict G to extremely small.
I mean, you can look with Gross-Podolsky and Lorenz-Landau level at when the surface mode instabilities occur, and what you call the depth points all occur, and then they exponentially head towards n equal equals 1. So most of them, I think, experimentally quite hard to see apart from the low end ones.
Nevertheless, I think the essence is this picture. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Having defended the relevance of these calculations, however, I also would like to say that those other questions are also fairly relevant theoretical in the sense that there is a connection between them, that approach and this approach, such as that, as I say, change the number of particle, for example, in this case, the event, or if I change the interaction in this case, eventually I think there's a connection between that limit and this limit. The question is that whether in the process of exciting this mode, suppose I just put it in some initial state, since you have the spectrum, then you would be able to see the dynamics. And then the question is that whether in some limit the dominant dynamics is generating nucleating vortices is dominated by the quadrupolar mode, and gradually as some parameter changes, you switch to another mode. I don't know what the answer is, but then I think there is a connection between the two regimes.
Yes, there is a connection, and that may be experimentally tested, fortified. Yeah. Okay, well, actually, this is numerical, but these numerical coefficients can be obtained analytically. And what we have done is the following. So we start from this second quantized Hamiltonian and observe that angular momentum and the number of particles is conserved. And also, in addition to this, we also observe that the dominant contribution, which is the Eras line, we know analytically. So I wanted to understand this analytically. So our strategy is to extract this part from the interaction and try to find what quasi particle would emerge as a consequence of that subtraction. And this is the result. Okay, so this is the exact rearrangement of the original Hamiltonian, and so this is the Eras line, which is proportional to L, and this is the octopolar mode, which I showed you just previously. So, and in addition to that, it's amusing that we have a series of very beautiful quasar particle spectrum, B1, B4, and B5 and B6, where B1 means that B1 is this one. So this is a particle hole pair excitation, which carries a net total angular momentum of 1. B4 is a particle-particle pair excitation, not particle hole, but particle-particle pair excitation, which carries a net angular momentum of 4. OK, B5 and B6 are similar. So there must be those beautiful excitation spectrum.
How do you define N3 in terms of the B operators? Is it a complicated thing?
Excuse me?
N3.
N3?
Yeah.
N3 is B3 dog and B3.
OK, I see.
Yeah. So this is a very simple quadrupolar mode excitation. This is a remnant. I mean, those are complicated remnant terms, but I can show you them explicitly, but that's too complicated, and the order of magnitude is smaller. R and S, order of magnitude is smaller.
N or down by what?
Pardon?
Is it down by a factor of N or down by some power?
Okay, a smaller by a in comparison with 1. This is the order of Gn, G times n. This is the order of 1. And they are of the order of n. And those terms are even smaller, of the order, smaller than 1.
There's no B. There wouldn't be expandable in like
There are. But their contributions can be shown to be smaller when the angular momentum is small.
But you just, I mean, that's just a question of degree. You decided to stop, or is there a fundamental difference between B1 through B6 and then
B1? Okay. There is a fundamental difference. I mean, only up to the point of B6 are important. The reason is this. Okay, symmetry breaking is caused by N3. And when N3 and N3 collide, then B6 appears. And also, Eras line is carried by quadrant pole mode. That is L equal 2. So when L equal 2 and L equal 3 collide, then L equal 5 appears. So up to
so you would actually then have N4 and things in N3, N4, and other couplings, and then...
Diagonal is those ones,
okay,
yes. The dominant part is quadrupolar and octopole mode, and those are the derivatives derived from those mode interactions. And this is obviously beyond Bogoliubov because I mean this is a particle pair excitation. So let's compare this with.
Could you get these quasi particles from the Bogoliubov?
No. This is exact rewriting. Yeah.
But if you try to do it with Bogoliubov, could you get each of those quasi particles?
Yeah. We can't. From Bogoliubov, we can't find those stuffs. No, we can't. And also, we can't find those stuffs too. Yeah. So they are beyond Bogoliubov. Okay. So this shows the comparison of. The dot shows the exact numerical diagonalization, and actually I can reproduce everything. So this line is of Eras line as Nicola and Smith showed, and this line corresponds to B1, and this line corresponds to B4, and this line corresponds to B5 and B6. So it's perfect.
How do you get these operators?
Oh, that's a good question. I subtracted from you from this term,
yeah.
And my collaborator Nakajima-san found those beautiful spectrum.
Yeah.
So they are so regular, so there must be some symmetry.
Yeah.
So based on this belief, I looked at. The equation for 2 months. Just try and error. Yes.
How do we understand this spectrum, collective excitation? Because you mentioned the roton. So where is the roton?
Roton is appears for angular momentum much, much larger than.
Okay, so not here.
Not here.
Okay. Because this line, which you show as collective excitation, it could look like a roton a little bit if it goes up.
No, this is just multipolar excitation. So quadrupolar and octopolar, L equal 4, 5, 6.
These quasi particles are infinitely long lived. I mean,
For a given angular momentum, this is not infinite, but because there is a very small residual terms. But actually, the order of magnitude is 1 over n smaller.
Mm-hmm. But the interaction does not mix them.
Interaction does mix them, but the degree of interaction is 1 order of n smaller.
Mixed by r and s, if you say. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I still don't really understand how it truncates like that. So you must have thrown away terms involving occupation. You've done an expansion in the occupation of states which are not n equals 0, right?
Not
broke states out, particles out of the condensates. So you must be just, you've chosen the, you must have truncated in some way. Right?
Yes, in a way that the dominant term is n equals 0. Condensate is.
Yeah, you obviously, you know, subtract, keep the n equals 0 state specially, and then you've got all the others, but yeah, more terms in the Hamiltonian. You've chosen
n equals 0.
The lowest one you can't express in terms of the global.
Do you mean this? So most particles occupy n equals 0 part. Yeah. Yeah, so this is of the order of square root of n. And this gives us a systematic expansion. Yes, you're right.
I think the question is whether R and S contain the terms which are like a continuation of this series, like B dagger 7, B 7, and B dagger 8, B 8.
Yes.
And whether those terms are then multiplied by a lower power of n, which is what?
No. There is no. In those residual terms, there is no longer a term of the order of zero.
He's claiming that R and S are less than, or not of order n, is much less than one.
Ah, okay.
I mean, maybe there's some coefficient like 32 over 519 is
a
coefficient of the next one.
We're
saying that's small, but you must
throw in some real coefficient. I'm sorry. I missed. There is some zero term in those terms. So like this. Yeah, those terms are indeed in those remaining terms.
So
this is square root of n. However, this is of the order of, and same with this. So the net effect is smaller than 1.
By 1 over square root of n.
One over square root of n. And this is also 1 over square root.
The total is 1 over square root of n.
1 over square, I think this is over the order, let's see. I think this is over the order of 1. Or maybe smaller, yeah. Over the order of 1 over square root of n, or smaller. Yeah.
Anyway, the point is that any higher terms of the same form have lower powers of n associated with them.
Yes. Yeah, thank you.
The capital B's contain how many powers
of
B0?
Capital B, this one.
Oh, B0. Oh, one.
Yeah, one.
Oh.
Yeah, one.
Oh, I see that. Okay, you're taking everything with angle B0, BN.
Right? B0. B0 is square root of n, and B.
No, but the term is maybe it must be terms like capital B7 and capital B8
with a hat on the issue. There is such terms, but.
I mean, I'm talking about B0 dagger,
B7, B10
dagger,
B10 dagger.
B0.
Okay. I haven't checked that. They are indeed small, but at least numerically, there is no such spectrum in this data.
Yeah,
so.
The question with the path of the spectrum you're looking at.
Yes. Yeah. So this expansion is valid only for small L. Yeah. L, it is much smaller than the number of atoms. Yeah.
I see. So you
haven't
come to the point of near the Laplacian type and then what the spectrum is yet.
Actually, yes. Well, if you increase the angular momentum, all those terms become rather irrelevant because those terms become also dominant. Mm-hmm. That's why the degeneracy is lifted sooner or later. Yeah. So in those regions, there are no longer octopole model. No longer octopole model. Yeah. Because they finished their role at this point. Okay, so let me actually, so now I turn to the point of Duncan. The only really important information is contained in this parabola. And what does this parabola plays a role in shifting, in lifting the degeneracy? In order to find this, okay, we also need to perform an even larger number of atoms. Okay, 256. It's amusing that, I mean, those hard work was rewarding. In a sense that, okay, this is the parabolic part. And it's amazing that this parabolic part extends to a very, outlives to a very high energy levels. And then we have a second parabolic line. The difference is this. So if we excite to this state for an extra quadrupole mode, remember that those illustrious lines are mainly carried by quadrupole mode. So if we excite another one quadrupole mode, then this line is shifted to this one. And two quadrupole mode, then this line is shifted to this one, and so on. And the dominant energy gap emerges as an envelope of those quasi-degenerate levels. And we have analytically understood this line. We have analytically understood this line.
That's the one that you just showed us.
N3 minus 1.
That's right. And then you say all the other ones are...
Yeah, also, it shifted.
...can be obtained by acting on it a quadrupolar operator.
Yes. Hmm. So we can understand those. Okay.
And the last curve is that you take the lowest state and they act on it by quadrupolar.
Envelope.
Operators continuously?
Yes. This last line is this one.
Yeah.
Okay, then my claim is this.
So it's just one octopole mode and then many quadrupolar excitations on top of it.
Not just one, but this is 3, 4, 5 octopole modes.
No, but the lowest one, the dominant one is just one octopole mode.
And
two octopole, and then you push it.
Yeah. Then you can get this. And please look at this. There are similar line. So the only remaining our task is to understand those lines. So if we can derive those terms analytically, then we can understand everything analytically. Okay, this was successful. Okay, since I have no time, let me show you just the results. These are analytical results. And those points are numerical one. And they fit, satisfactorily. The basic idea is this. I mean, this is a boson. So, and in the lowest lambda level, the wave function should be expanded in terms of symmetric polynomial, because this is a boson. And just look for, how to distribute angular momentum over n particles, and the most democratic way of partition gives this illustrious line. And then the next one is slightly less democratic one is this one, and so on. Yeah, and all those results can be done analytically in terms of symmetric polynomial subject to a given angular momentum and number of particles. So my claim is this. Perhaps, or the Hamiltonian I start with is exactly solvable. However, I haven't proved this yet. Okay, the next question is, what mode breaks the symmetry upon the entrance of a second vortex? Okay, so this means that so here I showed the octopole mode plays a role. So what happens here? So what mode helps a second mode vortex entrance? My claim is it's quintupole mode. Because at this point, we have one vortex here. Then what would happen when a second vortex would like to enter? Then there is some depletion here. And should be like this. Of course, this is somewhat subjective, so let me show you the picture. So this is one. So actually, this is a quintupole mode. And then we can expect a similar procedure can be done for this, like this, because we have now found out the fundamental mode, which is quintupole mode. Then we can perhaps do a similar analysis, which I hope I can do sooner or later. The quintupole mode. Okay, then let me go on to the next topic. What happens in the limit of very, very fast rotation? It is conceived that if the frequency of rotation exceeds a certain upper critical frequency, the vortex lattice melts and the strongly correlated regime will be realized. And what does this strongly correlated state look like? And the other day, Nigel talked a very related subject. Yes. So now in these regions. And Jason pointed out that when the frequency exceeds 0.98, then a mean field quantum Hall regime will be realized. And in fact, the recent JIRA experiments are already in this regime. Of course, there is a way to reach some upper critical point. I think it's worthwhile to discuss this region. And the difference from the Nigel's talk is he discussed the issue as a function of the angular frequency. Now I shall discuss the same issue as a function of the angular moment. So this is the result. So this is the energy, interaction energy as a function of angular momentum. And this region is the first elast line. So the first vortex enters the system, the second vortex enters the system, and then so on. As angular momentum increases, the spectrum again becomes quasi-degenerate. However, when the angular momentum reaches n times n minus 1, we have a zero energy state appearing, which is the nu equal 1/2 Laplacian state. Nu equal 1/2 because it is a boson. Okay, so this is, of course, well known. But what I found is interesting is that just above this Laplacian state, there is a very well-defined single particle-like state, which is separated from the above continuum level. Shown in the inset is an expanded view of this picture. And I show this in the reverse way. So this is a Laplacian state. And this direction corresponds to this direction. So as we can see that in this picture, we clearly see a Roton minimum. So this looks like a Roton spectrum, and there is a minimum. We have done some finite size scaling in order to show that this minimum remains in the thermodynamic limit. The size is of the order of G. So it's very small, because the usual Hartree-Fock energy is of the order of G times N, the number of atoms. But still, the point is that this minimum remains finite, however small it is. And another noticeable fact is that there is no phonon branch. Yeah. And the physics of this bound state is pretty much sure to be a bound state of a vortex-anti-vortex pair. Yeah. The reason is this. So we have so delta function interaction, and the Laplacian state is energy zero because all particles have a relative angular momentum of two. Two is arises from boson nature. Okay. Then let us ask what is the excitation would look like. The excitation can occur only if we break those relative angular momentum line. But however, we cannot eliminate just one because of statistical requirement. This is a boson system, so if you eliminate this one and add this to this one, then the symmetry gives us the null result. The only way we can excite is at least remove two of them and add it to maybe another branch. Here, we have no connection. Therefore, they can contact and gives rise to a gap. Yeah.
Masahita.
Yes.
Right when the rotor minimum is.
Yes.
If I look on your picture and try to yes, I try to understand what's the absolute value of the energy.
Yes.
How strongly above zero it is. Or
G.
G.
G. Yeah.
But of course, we'll go on. A function angular momentum is going to become
flat.
Going for a long time.
Yes. What usually happens in the rotor minimum, if it's very close to zero, and in your big picture, it's rather close to zero. Yes? No. In the other one, right here.
Yes.
If I look at this picture,
right.
Somewhere here,
this
I
one?
See that the rotor minimum, it's a bit close to zero, yes?
Yeah, close to zero, but over the order of G.
Yes. What about quantum fluctuations? Because usually, for example, in helium, if I were able to shift the rotor minimum in helium to very low energy, so pressure or whatever, then my quantum fluctuations would become very strong, and then they can destroy, in the case of helium, they would destroy the boson condensed state, yes? And for example, towards crystallization or whatever.
Oh, okay, imposing pressure or something.
He has no quantum fluctuations. It's everything is there already. He's diagonalized the whole thing, all the quantum.
Yes. So do you say that there are no quantum fluctuations at all?
These are the quantum fluctuations.
Huh?
These are the quantum fluctuations.
Everything is there.
Everything is there. So.
Yeah, but he dropped some term in the
this one.
Not on this one.
Yes. So this is our exact eigenstate. Of course, within the lowest lambda level approximation.
Of course, for a larger system, it's not only L total, it's the momentum scaled by the number of particles. So it'll come down not at a fixed angular momentum at L equals 4 or something like that. It'll flatten out after something related to the size of the system.
Yeah.
I think for the delta function interaction, this keeps on. We haven't got much structure in it.
It's just
energy of a pair of an energy of a single vortex, any vortex pair, and
yes.
Vortex of zero energy.
Yeah. So when they
the
go
energy,
apart,
the energy of a single Laplacian
quasi particle and quasi hole. Yeah.
I'm not sure. So this is the energy, this G, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, but what now? This minimum eventually flatten out all.
It's not really a minimum. It might be a very shallow minimum.
Yeah. My question is that if it's shallow minimum, what is this scale then? that eventually they will saturate somewhere, presumably.
This scale is also of the order of G.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a universal number then?
No. This gap.
Depth
of the gap.
The gap is fixed just by G.
There is some numerical factor which I haven't found. Numerical factor is there, but I haven't found any analytical factor. Okay, so. Okay. Well, no phonon branch despite the short range nature of interaction. In the fractional quantum Hall systems, there is also magnetorotor branch and no phonon spectrum. And well, there is some discussions. Yes, incompressible. By definition. But if you have a hole, then it becomes slightly compressible.
No.
No. Huh. Is it because of the long range nature of the interaction?
Because it's an incompressible quantum fluid. There's a rigorous, at least in the whole context, there's a rigorous thing, time and density to the magnetic field, which is, I guess, here time, the particle, the density to the angular momentum of the particle. Rigorous construct, an incompressible thing is exactly the angular momentum of a particle or the angular momentum is exactly fixed by the number of particles and locally too, so density is fixed density.
Oh, okay. Density modulation, yeah.
But those are false statements, Duncan. It's really, he's in this geometry there. It's not entirely obvious why.
There's only edge excitation.
Yeah, the edge excitation wouldn't get you down to lower energy. But
this is spherical.
Huh?
This is spherical.
So this one?
Spherical.
Oh, this is spherical. Oh, my goodness. You didn't tell me.
Yeah, this is. Oh. I'm sorry. Yeah, this only is you.
Yeah. Oh,
the bulk is incompressible.
Okay, then then you, then you don't have.
Okay, then Duncan's answer is correct.
Yeah. Okay, so this is my final view graph. This is completely different subjects, but also we can expect some quantum phase transitions. This view graph shows a binary BEC system. So rubidium 87 but we have two components, F equal one component, F equal two component. And what happens if we rotate both systems faster? And this view graph shows there are two interaction parameters. One is a intra component in coupling constant, where the same species interact with each other, and the other is inter component. And this line shows the ratio of inter component versus intra component as a function of the rotation frequency. And again, you did it fast. I'm always admire how you did everything fast. So this first rotating line was done by Miller and Ho. And for example, suppose that we fix the strength of intercoupling constant versus the intercoupling constant at this point, and we increase the strength of interaction. Then there is a phase transition from triangular lattice to the square lattice, from triangular to the square lattice. And if we increase the intercomponent interaction further, for example, to this some boundary conditions, then we can expect that some interesting pictures like stripe patterns or double core vortex. So here is double core. And if we can further increase the strength of intercomponent interactions, then two vortices shifts from each other, and so this is the component one and this is the component two, and the crosses show where the vortex singularities lie. So if we superimpose both of them, then the overall structure is Thomas Fermi. but each component shows what we call serpentine vortex sheets. Yeah. So maybe there are more.
How do you get those? What do you do to get it? Is it time dependent
calculation? Time dependent calculation. Yeah. This is a work by grad student Kasamatsu-san, and each point takes one day. So that you can understand why we are late. Yeah. Okay, this is all what I want to say in this talk, and thank you very much for this talk.